Hi, this is Mark Wade, writer of Daredevil, and you're listening to Longbox Heroes.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 373 of Longbox Heroes. I'm Joe, joined by Todd. Todd, how you doing today?
I'm fired up and ready to talk comics, Joe.
Did somebody say something about fired up?
Is that from the Crow movie? Fire it up.
No, that's Wildfire Tommy Rich.
Oh, my favorite Rich.
Mm-hmm. Former NWA World Heavyweight Champion. Obtained through not nefarious means, I assure you.
All right. Slow your roll.
That's right. We got enough wrestling to talk about on Gallifreyburns this week. Tommy Rich, actually, a notable exception. I assumed he would have been on Heroes of Wrestling. But I think he might have been on an upswing in his career, which is, well, that's for Friday, everybody. You'll have to wait till then to see how the heroes handled their wrestling. But we're here to talk about comic books and heroes of another kind, superheroes. A little bit of news that we have to discuss, more shakeups at Marvel, and a long overdue in this podcaster's opinion of a certain character at DC getting an animated series.
Yes.
Some light, a sprinkling of convention news, and maybe a report from a convention that happened this past weekend. A plethora of digital sales. It's almost as though there's some sort of shopping season that's beginning in the next few days. What we read this past week, which would be Doctor Strange number 381 and Batman number 35, what we're looking forward to coming out this week, as well as a little bit of a clarification update on our ongoing contest. Todd and Joe have issues as we discuss thing number 8. And as the nature boy Ric Flair would say, Todd is going to apparently take me to school on a certain reference.
Mm-hmm.
We're also going to be discussing the recent film adaptation of the Justice League, as well as the most recent episodes, as of this recording, of The Flash and Legends of Tomorrow, which is like last week's episodes.
Right.
So let's get into the news, Todd. It has been announced that Marvel has a new editor-in-chief. Taking the place of Alex Alonso is a gentleman by the name of C.B. Cebulski. C.B. Cebulski. Now, I know C.B. Cebulski has been working at Marvel for a very long time. I recognize his name from a lot of, and I'll say, a lot of, I don't want to say, like, kids stuff, but, like, quirky stuff. I know the first thing that I remember him doing at Marvel was a book called Loners. I don't know if you're familiar with this.
No, I don't remember Loners.
So Loners was a superhero support group book where characters who were kind of left off from Power Pack, from Slingers, from Runaways, essentially characters that weren't being used at the time, were getting together to try to keep each other from becoming superheroes again.
Mm-hmm.
And wouldn't you know who won the pony? Of course, they all become superheroes again. The hook of the cover is that all of the covers were aping popular 80s movies posters.
Right.
Your Breakfast Clubs, your Pretty in Pinks, and your so-ons and so-forth. Cebulski was kind of like a jack of all trades. He was doing editor stuff. He was working with the video game side of things. But he was mostly a recruiter for Marvel for the better part of the last, I would say, 6 or 7 years. A lot of the people that you've seen come over, mostly artists. Everyone from Scotty Young to Sarah Pacelli, McNiven, and all points in between, they were all recruited by Cebulski.
Right.
So now he's moved up through the ranks, and now he is the top dog there.
Yes.
And a lot of people are pointing at this, coupled with Bendis leaving last week, and they're not saying that this is a reaction to Bendis leaving, but more so, Bendis is leaving, Cebulski is moving up, this very well could be the beginning of Marvel attempting to make those steps to make some sort of change in their infrastructure and their output.
Right. And, I mean, you know, if he can spot talent and he knows, we'll just have to see, because an editor is very important in, you know, like creating comics. So I want to see what he does. If he can spot talent, that's the most important, because with Brian Michael Bendis leaving and, you know, you really only have Jason Aaron left there, the rumors that Hickman's going, you really have to refill that stable. But with people like, what is his name? Donnie Coates?
Donnie Coates, I think it is. Who's doing the Doctor Strange book and stuff?
Right, he's somebody who could be big and whatever, and that's what you really need to do. And he has somewhat of a track record for finding people, and we'll see where it goes.
Donnie Cates.
Somebody got a name wrong on the show. It's the first time.
We're talking about it. We're right in the moment. I have it in my notes. I apologize.
I know. I'm joking, but I look forward, because, like I said, I've discussed this at the shop many, many times with people. The comic industry is at its strongest when DC and Marvel are both doing well, and that's what we really need. The last couple of years, maybe even a decade, it seems like one or the other is on top. And what we really need again is for both the big two to be really, really strong. So hopefully he does well.
Right, and not to say that Marvel is doing bad, it's just for the better part of the last year and a half, DC has really been, outside of Star Wars and Spider-Man to a lesser extent, Marvel really hasn't been putting up any real numbers. They have a lot of good stuff there creatively, but they're just not getting people to read it, unfortunately.
Right, or they have bad press or whatever. It's just, you know what I'm talking about? When both companies, people are raving about stuff at both companies. And I think, especially when we talked about Captain America a few weeks ago with that issue, like, this is the kind of stuff that could turn it around. A new editor. I'm with you, and I speak for myself, but I think you're with me. Is I just want to see Marvel do well, because then I get good comics.
Right, and the thing is, we are getting good comics from them. It's just a lot of times things don't last as long as they should, because not a lot of people are reading them, and if nobody's reading stuff, then they're just going to go away.
Right. My thing right now is I'm definitely reading more DC than Marvel. So what I'm saying is they're not doing bad. I would just like to see more stuff that I enjoy, and that would bump up my Marvel sales, even though it would kill my wallet.
Mm-hmm. So something that I'm not sure how it's going to affect our wallet is the announcement that Warner is going to be doing a Harley Quinn animated series. And it's not just one of their direct-to-DVD things. It's going to be a full season, 26 episodes, as they say, an adult animated action comedy.
Ooh.
And it's going to be on whatever Warner's digital platform is going to be. So obviously there's no time frame on this.
Mm-hmm.
They are talking to have Margot Robbie, who was Harley Quinn in the Suicide Squad film, do the voice as well for synergy. But I think this is a thing, hopefully, if DC markets it correctly, and over the last couple of years they have been doing such a better job on that, whatever their digital platform is going to be, this is something that would be great as a launch title or a launch series to get people interested in their digital platform, whatever it might be.
I wonder if that's why Palmiotti left the book. Maybe he's going to write the cartoon.
Well, I know the initial art that they have of, like, the developmental art, kind of like the, I would assume what's going to be the character Bible, was done by Amanda Connor. And I can only imagine that Jimmy and Amanda are somehow involved in some way, shape, or form. They're not announced as being involved, but we're so early into this, you never know.
Mm-hmm. So now, would this make you get that platform?
As it stands right now, I'm more interested in it than I was before. But also involved in this is that that long talked about live action Titan show.
Mm-hmm.
And even further long talked about, and I actually just talked about this to the guys on Puzzle Warrior 3 last week, about the Young Justice series, that they have been talking about bringing that back for a third season since the second season ended, which have been at least 8 years.
I thought they announced that there was a third season.
They did, and then nothing ever came of it.
Well, it's animation. It takes a while, Joe.
I guess.
You can't just, it's not like, hey, put an actor on stage and he's like, hey, I'm the Young Justice. It's like, no, you have to animate it. It'll be fine.
I saw a documentary where it takes the guys from South Park 6 days to make an episode.
Well, that's a little different. Do you want a South Park quality animation Young Justice?
Maybe.
I would watch a Justice League International by the creators of South Park.
I would watch, at least give a try to a Justice League International anything.
Yes.
And I feel as though Legends of Tomorrow is as close as we're going to get, at least for the time being, but...
I don't know. You never know.
That's another conversation for another day as well.
Or the end of the show.
but yeah, you know, it looks like you're going to have Harley, you're going to have Ivy, Poison Ivy. Looks like just in the promotional stuff, you've got like a Killer Croc looking guy, you got a King Shark looking guy, you got Clayface, you got Kite Man. So this looks like it certainly could be fun.
I just give Tom King that big check for making Kite Man cool again.
Right. Well, this looks to be kind of more a schlubby, not cool Kite Man. So depending on how big of a success Kite Man becomes, they might have to revamp him for the show before it even comes out.
Oh, I hope they do the War of Jokes and Riddles.
The clown show has been canceled for retooling.
Okay.
So again, it's a light week, as mentioned, for news, of course. I think we're getting toward the end of the year. There's not a ton of stuff going on. I know there's really only one convention going on of any sort of note, and that doesn't have a link through their Facebook page, which means I can't access it through the for the show notes. But anyway, the only one that I see here is something called the Chicago Pop Culture Con. Mm-hmm. That's happening. I'm trying to pull up their guest list, but I wish they did have a Facebook page. I mean, what?
Whoa. I hope you recorded that, because you'll never hear that again.
I did. Well, the link to their page is in the show notes. Maybe you'll have a better way of navigating their very confusing website than I am.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to... This is not HTML 101. This is Longbox Heroes 373, but... either way, Todd, you were at a convention this past weekend, speaking of conventions that only have a Facebook page as their landing page.
Mm-hmm. I was at the Scranton Comic Con this weekend.
Yeah, how did it go? Did you get a table? Did you have any fun? Did you do stuff?
I did not get a table.
All right.
Because I only get tables with my good partner, Joe.
Who's that?
Joe Sposto.
Oh, that guy. I know that guy.
Great commentator. From what I hear. But yeah, no, I walked around for a little bit. I looked at some of the tables. They didn't have anything I want. My taste in books seems to run very weird, and like small cons don't seem to have them. So, of like the back issues that I'm looking for, there was toys. There was, you know what was there? And I was almost going to text you, but I didn't know what you were doing. You were too busy watching your son wrestle, I think.
Right.
On Sunday. Was that somebody had like mini Lego figures in like individuals.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I was looking for a Captain Cold. Mm-hmm. I think you were looking for one of those, but I'm not sure if you still are or whatever. But so I was looking for that. And then, like I said, there was toys. Somebody had bootleg DVD/VHS tapes. Yeah. That makes it a con, Joe.
Now, the last time we were there, they did not. There was no such table. There was no such vendor.
Right.
As this. But, oh, that takes me back to a day.
It does. I was like, oh. And I was afraid to take pictures because I was afraid. I've done that at shows of bootleg stuff and gotten almost beat up. So because people think you're going to report them or something.
Sure.
I had somebody almost come out behind a table because I took a picture, or I was going to take a picture of a knockoff Captain America shield years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy's like, you can't. And this was like at a New York show. And he was like with the big, tough New York accent. He's like, you can't take a picture of that. And I'm like, why? He's like, I'll come out there. And I kept like picking up my phone like I was going to take a picture. You know what I mean? Like, huh? Huh? And just because I have a bit of a jerk in me sometimes, Joe. So I ended up I think I actually did take a picture when he wasn't looking, just because I don't know if I have it anymore. But yeah, so I'm afraid to take pictures of bootleg stuff because the mafia almost beat me up at a show once.
Of course.
I didn't end up getting anything.
No, nothing?
No, they had a set of books that I wanted. I was looking for a run of like an issue. I think Denny O'Neill might have written it. I don't know. It was, I think, Green Arrow and, of all people, Black Condor or something. It was a Brave and the Bold mini that I was looking for. And they had all five issues, but they were like $4 an issue.
Oof.
And then they're like, oh, if you buy three or you get the fourth one free, and I'm still like, I can beat this on eBay and have it sent to my house for what they wanted. You know what I mean? So I ended up not really getting anything. Our local retailer set up. There was a couple of, not some artists there. Tom Derenick wasn't, but so.
Did anyone make fun of our local retailer for having a fancy sign?
I don't think he had a sign this time. I think he cut down. I don't remember if he had the sign, but yeah, because you have to have an inside out beer box that says comics with an X on it to be really, that's what I always say. Sorry, my sign isn't that.
But I'm glad you had a good time at the local Scranton comic book convention.
Yep, one of these times they have it, we should just get another table for just the podcast alone. And we should do a live show from the Scranton Con. And by live, I mean record it on your phone.
Well, there are probably ways that we could do that.
Mm-hmm.
But that's, again, sounds like a lot of work, Todd.
Well, I'm not afraid of having...
You gotta bring a plug, you gotta bring a laptop, you gotta bring microphones.
I'm not afraid of you doing a lot of work, Joe. I'm not.
I'm glad someone's not.
I have a laptop and a microphone. I don't have a plug.
Right. One day we'll do a live show.
Oh, I can't wait.
Right. So the link to that convention that I mentioned before, the Chicago Pop Culture Con with the confusing website, is in the show notes, as well as a link to soon-to-be-named-network.com at soon-to-be-named-network.tumblr.com as well, where you can get all the information about all your favorite shows that are part of the said soon-to-be-named network, whether it be this show, Longbox Heroes After Dark, Fresher in Parlance, Profane Argument, Puzzle Warriors 3, Paladins of Voltron, AIM Downsides Podcast, Talking Gimmicks, making their long-awaited return, Todd, talking about a classic wrestling event, Survivor Series 1999, I'm sorry, 1990, rather, which saw the debut of two absolute legends in the world of professional wrestling, the Gobbledygooker, and some guy, the Under something or other, I don't know.
Really?
One of those guys amounted to something.
Gooker.
I'll leave it to you to decide which was which.
Mm-hmm.
Also, Podbacy, of course, they're on schedule for their Monday nights. And as part of his A Podcast a Day for Podcast Month, which I didn't even know November was, Jason Kirk has been all over the place, whether it be on the Radio Free Cybertron show or the Take My Money show, which are part of the same Transformery umbrella, but also he's been doing his own Kirkcast, which is kind of just like a one-man sort of deal, occasionally with a guest, talking about all things going on in his life, to hit that quota of one podcast a day for the entire month of November. But anytime any of those come available, you can certainly check them out, Longbox Heroes, or soon-to-be-named-network.com, soon-to-be-named-network.tumblr.com.
Yay.
Also included in the show notes, Todd, are all the digital sales and freebies that are going on. And Todd, there is 1,000 sales going on. Some of them are holdovers from the last couple weeks. Titan has their Tank Girl stuff on sale still. Marvel has Punisher stuff on sale, as well as Runaways stuff. The Runaways TV show, which just debuted on the old Hulu as we're recording this, and I really want to check that out, but I've got a very busy schedule, Todd. Image is having a sale on the series Chew. Dynamite is having a line-wide sale, as is Aftershock. Both of those you got to double-check. Because you need to put it, those are one of the ones where you have to put in the code to get the discount, you know. IDW is having a sale on Transformers stuff, as we mentioned Transformers stuff before, with what Jason has been up to. Marvel is having what they're calling a giant size sale, which is just a sale on, omnibuses, best of 2017 collections, various and sundry other things. On the other hand, DC is having a sale that they themselves are calling DC's March to Black Friday biggest sale ever. And Todd, I can't even scratch the surface of what's on sale in this.
Okay.
I really can't. And you want Batman, Todd? They've got Batman. You want the classics, your Year One, your Dark Knight Returns, the stuff that I always suggest, they're in there. You want the first three trades of either the Rebirth Batman or Detective Comics series, these are included in the trade as the sale as well. Todd, you want Wonder Woman, you want Justice League, you want the entire Sinestro Corps War for $5, you want every other DC event from Final Crisis to Invasion to Zero Hour.
Oof.
Superman. Sandman is included in the sale, Todd. And Todd, not just Sandman, but like the recent, like the Furies miniseries, all the Death stuff collected together, the Dream Hunter stuff is all collected together. Preacher is all in this. Transmetropolitan, Fables, Scalped, Why the Last Man. Todd, when they say it's their biggest sale ever, it's everything.
Are you telling me this is the Prego of comic book sales? It's in there?
Oh, it's not the Chicken Tonight of sales, but I'll give you Prego.
Okay.
I think the entire Palmiotti gray run of All-Star Western / Jonah Hex is in this.
Oh, stop.
I'm looking at it here. So it looks, so the entirety of All-Star Western is in there, which is six trades. And then, where do Palmiotti and Gray pick up the Jonah Hex name book? They did it with, like, number one, right?
Yep, 1 to 70, I think.
Okay, well, there is 11 trades that collects that entire run?
I think that might be more trades too. Like, I think that's the whole run. And then maybe that might be like the Vertigo run in there too. You know what I mean?
There's a couple things that aren't numbered. Mm-hmm. Something called No Way Back and another one called Bury Me in Hell.
No Way Back was an original hardcover that, Jimmy Palmiotti and Justin Gray wrote, and the original writer or the original artist who created Jonah Hex, Tony DeZuniga, did, like, that was one of his last projects before he passed away. So, but that takes place in the Jimmy Palmiotti, Justin Gray run.
Right. So it's everything. Like,
oh my goodness.
It's so much stuff. The entire run of Justice League International is in here. It's everything. So and this is one of those ones that only goes until, the weekend. This is a March to, Black Friday, as they mentioned. So they're looking to steal all of your money before you get a chance to spend it on other people's gifts for the holidays. And I say do it. Get yourself something nice. You know, put down $35 and get the entire run of Preacher. Do yourself a favor, honestly.
Right. And then you can watch the show afterwards.
Don't do that.
Uh-oh. You okay, big guy?
If the couple cents from rounding it over, you can get like a blindfold and earplugs. Just in case someone has that show on in front of you.
That's right.
All right, so enough of this nonsense. All is included in the show notes. Todd, let's get into what we've read from this past week. I'm going to let you start things off with the book you were most looking forward to coming out this week, which was Batman number 35.
Right, which is Talia al Ghul versus Selina Kyle, Selina Kyle, fiance of Batman now, going to get Holly Robinson, who was the person that Selina Kyle is blamed for killing a bunch of people, and Batman has gone with her. So basically this is Selina and Talia fighting over that, and then in this is some of the best part of the book that I think is Dick Grayson and Damian discussing their lives about what's going on and the marriage and everything. And once again, I mean, we've been over this a lot because it's the Batman book. It's one of my favorite books in the DC universe right now. There's not much really more that I can say about it. It was a light week, or I maybe would have picked something else. But Batman, like, I still constantly get people on Batman at the shop. I'm like, you got to read this book. I'm looking forward to seeing where this goes, and I'm 50-50 on whether Selina and Bruce are going to get married. I don't know which way I would wager my money right now.
You don't think it's going to happen?
Do you think it's going to happen?
Hmm.
Do you think Batman's going to be happy?
No. I think the wedding will happen.
Mm-hmm.
We will be solicited a wedding issue. But the wedding won't happen in that issue. I think they're getting some, not to say that they need to, but I definitely think this is going to be a through line for a lot longer than we think.
Oh, right. I don't think the engagement's going to end within the next two storylines, but I don't know if the marriage is going to happen. Like, and I'm wondering who's going to walk away is the kind of the deal.
I definitely feel it's going to be one of those things where if it doesn't happen, that Selina is going to be the one that stands Bruce up at the altar.
Right.
Now, one of the other things that I wanted to mention about this book is the reminder of the great interplay that exists and can happen between Damian Wayne and Dick Grayson.
Mm-hmm.
And this made me long for that Batman and Robin run by Grant Morrison where Dick was Batman and Damian was Robin.
What was the run? No, I'm trying to think because I didn't read the Morrison run, but I did read I'm thinking was there ever a Tomasi Dick and
there
Damian?
Was a run? Yes.
That's the one I really enjoyed.
When Morrison left Batman and Robin to do Batman Inc.,
mm-hmm.
Tomasi took over the main Batman and Robin book.
That's the one I like.
Right, and that's the thing. It doesn't matter who the writer is. You know, Peter Tomasi, who's a good writer in his own mind, Tom King, who's a little bit more heady of a writer, and Grant Morrison, a much more heady of a writer, polarizing in many people's eyes. But it does not matter who the writer is. When you have those two characters, that is a dynamic that I don't think anyone has ever gotten wrong.
You know what I honestly think it comes down to, and we believe it now, is that honestly, Damian, the only person he will honestly open up to is Dick Grayson. Otherwise, it's all bravado.
Right, and I think he shows any sign of vulnerability at all.
It nailed it. And that's what I love about it. And there is tons of that in the little scene while they're waiting for Bruce and Selina to come out of the, like, where they can't go. And just talking about it and the gentle ribbing that, like, Dick will give Damian and everything that Damian wouldn't stand for from anybody else. It's almost like Damian only respects one man and that's his father. But in the end, he's like, I'm going to have that job. But the only other person that he has any respect for is Dick Grayson. And that's why I think it works so well. So I enjoy that too. I'd like to see, imagine if Tom King did a book with just those two or anybody actually.
I'd be okay with that.
Me too. Maybe we'll write it.
Nah, that sounds like, I got to set up two microphones at a convention in 6 months.
Oh boy.
My schedule's full.
Okay.
No, but Batman, the Tom King Batman, and even this, these past couple issues that have kind of had rotating artists in there, mm-hmm. Have been really good.
Yes, I like the art in this one.
So my pick was Doctor Strange number 381, back to the original numbering. I didn't have the time to look it up to see if it was correct or not. Let's say it is. Written by Donny Cates, mentioned at the top of the show, with art by Gabriel Hernandez-Walta. Now, Donny Cates came to kind of us at the show's radar when he did that book Redneck for Image that I thought was really good.
Right.
And then he took over two books that we were both enjoying over here at Marvel, one being Doctor Strange, the other being Thanos, which either comes out this week or next. I think it's this week. So again, getting a little bit more high-profile things, but regardless of the writer, the image that they put out for this book with the Marvel Legacy promotion was Loki is Sorcerer Supreme. And to me, that is one of those, as Todd likes to say, one of those wrestling gotchas. You show anyone who has any sort of knowledge or any sort of familiarity with the Marvel Universe, and you just say Loki is the Sorcerer Supreme, they're going to want to read that book.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what this is. So I'll be honest with you. I went into this with the mindset of, I want to know how Loki became Sorcerer Supreme. They do not give you the answer to that question. They tease a little bit that he won it, but it's Loki telling you, so you really can't believe him. Loki, though, is looking for... he's in a bad spot. It seems as though the position of Sorcerer Supreme might be a little too much for him. So he is looking for assistance, specifically to open the one door in the Sanctorum, what is it?
The Sanctuary Sanctorum or something
like
that?
The one door that he cannot open, he is looking for assistance to open that up. We also learn what is the current, I guess, fate or position of Zelma, who was introduced in the previous Jason Aaron run, and we are also informed of what Stephen Strange is up to now as well.
Mm-hmm.
I went into this book looking for the answer to one question. I ended up getting about six more questions that I all need the answer to. I thought this was one of the better jumping on stories of any of the Marvel Legacy books that I've read so far. I really like this book. I'd fallen off Doctor Strange when they did that kind of misnumbering thing, and they tied it into Secret Empire, and I'm like, yes. New writer, books being published out of order, and it's a tie into a crossover that I'm not reading. That's a way to get me to throw this book in the garbage. I'm back on Doctor Strange.
That's interesting, because the way you say that, it sells me. Now, you're saying you don't get the answer to why he's the Sorcerer Supreme, but the story's strong enough, and like you said, it's interesting enough to keep going. So, I don't know. I think I might have to try this book, and with him coming on Thanos, I'm wondering if Marvel's got a heavy hitter right now.
Well, certainly they're grooming him as such.
Yep.
They're not putting him on the slouch books, if you will.
Right.
So that's what we read from this past week. Let's get into what's coming out this week. If you head over to longboxheroes.com, every Tuesday around 5:30 Eastern time or so, we put up the pull post, which is a link to all the books that are coming out this week, whether you get your books in print, whether you get your books digitally, whether you get them mailed to your home, whether you wait for the trades, or whether you wait 6 to 10 months for a sale to happen through whatever digital platform you get your books through. Be forewarned and be forearmed for knowing what books are coming out this week. Todd and I are both putting up a list of not only what books we're getting, but breaking out by publisher and keeping a running tally so we can see how many books that we've purchased in the calendar year 2017. 2018, it's going to be a dollar amount to make sure that we cry this time next year.
Oh, God, I can't even... Ugh.
We're also attempting to guess what the other is most looking forward to coming out this week. I've stumbled a bit. Todd has a healthy lead of 3 correct guesses over me, and with only 6 weeks left in the year, I don't think I'm going to close that gap, sadly.
You're not a gap closer, no. Supposed to.
So, looking at the list that Todd has, It's definitely not Doomsday Patrol, because that's not real. Mm-hmm.
Could it be Incredible Iron Man?
Could be Incredible Iron Man, which is also not real. Good gravy.
You might have to change the pool list for the first time today.
Were you dipping into the Spectrox before you put your list together?
I was. I had two bumps of Spectrox and a shot of Jingle Jangle.
Oh, my goodness. But no, the book Todd is most looking forward to coming out this week is Doomsday Clock number one.
Yes, it is. Is the book you are looking forward to most also The Clock of Doomsday?
Correct. So there was discussion of us attending a midnight sale to talk about that book on this week's show. But one, the book has pretty much been spoiled everywhere. I've avoided the spoilers because that's the sort of guy I am. But two, we have such more stuff to talk about. I felt as though if we talked about Doomsday Clock, it might get lost in the shuffle.
Right. Two things. It was an 11:57 sale.
Oh, excuse me.
And second of all, I have no idea what happens in Doomsday Clock whatsoever. I've completely stayed away from everything.
I know there's something about pancakes, and that's really all I know.
Yes, and if anyone who listens to this show knows how you get on the pancake list, let me know. Because right. I wanted that box of pancakes / maple syrup. I would have ate the pancakes out of it.
We don't want comps. We don't want freebies. We don't want advanced solicitations of books. Just send us the DC branded pancakes.
Oh, that would be fantastic. Now, people who do send us stuff, I love them anyway.
Right. And you could send us stuff, and by stuff we mean money, by purchasing through the little store link over at longboxheroes.com a shirt or a sticker with our fancy logo on it. Or if you purchase something through our Amazon click-through, the holidays are upon us. And sales are coming up. I understand that there's a way to somehow link your Amazon account to your Comixology account. So if you partake in any of those DC sales that we were talking about before or any of the other sales, we can somehow get a kickback. I don't know how it works, but there's a way. If you put it in DuckDuckGo, it might tell you. I'm not really sure. DuckDuckGo. Possibly, we're testing it out. This is where we test out the new material for the act. It might replace Bing as my joke go-to of search engine optimization.
Wait a minute. First of all, joke?
Kayfabe, brother.
And second of all, I've never heard of DuckDuckGo.
God, you got to keep up with these tech bloggers, man.
Oh, right now, I am on DuckDuckGo, but go ahead.
All right. Some of the notable purchases through the Amazon click through this past week is Tobin's Spear Guide, the official Ghostbusters edition, possibly not the same one that was referred to by Egon in the 1984 Ghostbusters film. Someone also purchased the all-new X-Factor trade number one by past guest of the show, Peter David. I included on the list of all the many things that were purchased because the subtitle of the trade was called Not Brand X.
Right.
Which is a delightful play on words.
Right. That is the greatest job of Peter David, is the thing that he names things. And right off the bat, one for Aquaman, single wet female is one of my favorites. And the greatest single issue name of a comic ever is One Down, Wendigo. Done. You can't beat that.
Oh, that's right up your alley, Todd.
Oh, that is my wheelhouse, son.
Somebody also purchased Runnin' with the Devil, a backstage pass to the Wild Times, Loud Rock, and Down and Dirty Truth behind the making of Van Halen.
Ooh.
A book that I think is printed on Spectrox.
Yes.
And someone also purchased a Husqvarna 28cc, two-stroke, 170 mile per hour, gas-powered, handheld leaf blower.
Oh, boy. There's going to be a lot of blowing of leaves somewhere.
I think he has to clean up his messy child with that.
Oh, God. You want to make piles of Spectrox with that?
So, Thank you, everyone who purchased anything through the Amazon click-through, and an advance thank you for everyone who's going to do all their Christmas shopping over the next 7 days through our Amazon click-through. Speaking of over the next 7 days and things that you could do for us, the contest is still going on, and just some clarification on the contest. And this is completely on me because I took a picture of things, but I did not open things. The Quantum and Woody book that you can win, along with the two bands, the book is the retailer edition. The only way that you could get that is if you were a retailer who attended New York Comic Con. Or if you're one of the two people that win this contest. It's not the full issue as I thought it was, but it's still a really cool collector's item that very few people have. And you could be one of those few people by simply entering our contest and leaving a review on iTunes on the main show. And in 2 weeks today, we will pick two people at random who will get the prize pack of the retailer edition, which again is just that preview book that is super rare, super limited, and the two elastic bands, one yellow, one blue, with the clang on them. We've had a ton of Amazon reviews over the last week, and I do want to thank everyone who has left a review, and of course, again, an advance thank you to everyone else who was going to leave a review here in the next couple weeks. And I do want to mention, I was going to read one of the reviews that have popped up in the last week, but I would be remiss, Todd, if I did not read this review. And I probably read it on the show before when it originally got put up back in October of 2015 from Kevin Hellions, a longtime listener to the show. I read it to you then, Todd, and you laughed. I'm going to read it to you today. And you're going to laugh again. You know, you're in a comic shop. Everyone says, gosh, a comic shop. I should read. Well, let me tell you something. Joe, you don't want to talk comics with me because I review, okay? I review. You want to play 21? I got the new 52. You want to read Blackjack? I got one in digital, too. You want to play Aces and Eights? I've read the Royal Flush Gang, too. When you walk into a comic shop, when you want a review, the main thing you must do is you must accept Longbox Heroes.
Oh, my God, that's fantastic.
Now, that puts that review now is in a completely different frame of reference for Todd.
Yes, it is.
And to understand what this madness we're talking about is, you got to listen to After Dark this Friday.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my goodness. So, Todd, let's get into Todd and Joe Have Issues with the thing number 8, and this being your pick, you are taking point on this one.
Could we back up for 1 second?
Oh, did I forget something?
Todd's Art Attack?
Todd's Art Attack. Was there Todd's Art Attack stuff?
Yes, there was.
All right. What Todd's Art Attack stuff was there?
From Denna This Con, with her name is, I think, Is It Broken Yet? At Is It Broken Yet? Gave us a Batman Joker fighting by Adam T. Gotham, who is Adam Gorham. And also Euronymous, who has been a big Art Attack contributor, has a Kyle Starks, I think it's the Devil from his run on a Rick and Morty book, unless that is a character from Rick and Morty that looks like his Devil, and I don't know because I don't watch Rick and Morty.
Being a Kyle Starks guy, he does the Rick and Morty book as well as Rock Candy Mountain.
Okay.
And he did a signing, store appearance this past Monday or this past weekend possibly, and more than likely he just had these sketch boards with the Rick and Morty branding on them.
Mm-hmm.
And knowing Euronymous like I do, I know that he wanted to get a Rock Candy Mountain something.
Gotcha. That makes sense. And finally, I added a companion piece to last week's. It is from last week. I had the Fred Hembeck sketch card of Jonah Hex, the old Western Jonah Hex. This one is a Fred Hembeck sketch card of the post-apocalyptic Jonah Hex from the future. And like I said, I highly recommend getting, like, looking on eBay for his auctions. He does all the characters. And like I said, right now he's doing two character cards for more. They're $19 for the first bid. But it's Santa Claus and various comic book characters. So you got to love Fred Hembeck and those squiggle knees. I will always mention squiggle knees.
And lest you forget, friend of the show, longtime listener of the show, the fancy gentleman, Adam Van, Ooh. Not only put up one of his Asriel pages, but in a cool thing that I appreciate him for doing is putting these side by side of the actual printed page.
That's right. And I don't know if you know this, someone told him to buy that issue when he was questioning it, which is something that happened. So, and that person is named the Enabler, and we don't know who his secret identity is. Wink.
I was going to say, if Adam the Fancy Gentleman has someone in his life who is such an enabler, he should cut that person out of his life for having him make such poor decisions as buying Asriel pages when he could be purchasing, say, Captain Cold pages for me.
That's true. And this is a quick thing that I know he got a text from the Enabler that said, welcome to being a art collector, because one piece of art is an oddity. Two is a trend. Three is a collection, my friend. That's how you know you're an art. You have three pieces of art. You are an art collector.
So again, thanks to everyone who contributed anything to this week's Todd's Art Attack. I wanted to make sure we did get that in there. Thank you, Todd, for reminding me.
Yep.
Now it is time for Todd and Joe Have Issues with the thing number 8, discussing things to start would be you, Todd, since it was your pick.
This is written by Dan Slott and art by Kieran Dwyer, I'm guessing, which is the final issue of the too short Dan Slott run of The Thing, where Ben Grimm early on had won. No, he didn't win the lottery. He
got an inheritance.
Right. It was I remember Reed lost all the money that the Fantastic Four had made, but because Ben wasn't a family member, he didn't have control of it, so he gave it all to Ben, so he became a rich guy. And in this one, it's him having his famed poker nights at his house because he has decided through a series of events with a rabbi that he knows and a fellow from his Yancey Street days, an older gentleman, decided to give him a bar mitzvah because he never had one. And through a technicality, which is a genius technicality by Dan Slott, that he can have a second one because it's been 13 years since he turned into The Thing. So that's his second life. And they have it. And at the party, while they're having the poker night, all the characters are there and we're getting stories from like other people, like Squirrel Girls telling a story and the Impossible Man, and the gags that are going around at the party are absolutely hysterical. One of my favorites is Cyclops asking Reed Richards that he doesn't see his wife. So is his wife invisible, you know, looking at people's cards? And he's like, no, like never. But right next to him, Yellow Jacket has Wasp cheating for him. And, you know, he cheats. You know, you might have aces and eights or,
oh boy,
or stuff like that. But apparently Yellow Jacket cheats. Mm-hmm. So you don't want to play cards with him.
Right.
But I thoroughly enjoyed this issue. I like the fact that we got a touching moment with Ben where he talks about how he may, you know, what he learned from the Bible was about Lot, who had a lot thrown on him, and he thought he was cursed, but all his friends were on him. I think this is a nice, touching way to wrap up this short run, and I forgot how much I really liked Dan Slott's version of Benjamin Grimm, the ever-loving blue-eyed thing. I don't know. What did you think of the issue?
Well, again, I love this issue. Like I said, big fan of Dan Slott. Big fan of his portrayal, as you mentioned, of Ben Grimm. Surprisingly, Ben Grimm shows up very rarely, if not at all, in the Spider-Man run. I mm-hmm. think he showed up during the Avengers Academy days, when Amazing Spider-Man did a crossover with Avengers Academy, and Ben was a teacher at the school. But then that quickly devolved into a Spider-Man Human Torch thing. And I think that might be the issue, of course, is when you're going to do a Spider-Man and a member of the Fantastic Four story, it always is going to become a Peter and Johnny story.
Yep, Torch Spideys.
Right. Now, the other thing, as I mentioned in the little write-up, and as you mentioned as well, far too short, 8 issues, a lot of times a book. These Days would be lucky. It would probably have been canceled by issue 4, if not 5. Post-retconned into an initial miniseries. And while this issue is jam-packed, both with guest stars and story, I feel as though this was Dan Slott's opportunity to tell everything that he wanted to tell with whatever this run was going to be.
I agree.
That Squirrel Girl story with Bi-Beast could have been a full issue. The Impossible Man thing could have been a full issue. The Alicia's Master stuff, that could have been a full issue. The Bar Mitzvah stuff, that could have been a full issue. But he compressed it in a way that didn't feel compressed and didn't feel rushed.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that goes a long way to telling the type of storyteller that Dan Slott is.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree, and it's one of those, it reminds me of the last issue of Peter David did of the Hulk run, where he did all the stories that he wanted to do. This is the same way, and it ties it up in a nice little bow, and sometimes, you know, doing only 8 issues, it will be a great little run. Sometimes you go on too long, but I love this run. It makes me want to go back now and read 1-7. Because I read this. And that's the sign of a really good writer / issue. Makes you want to reread the run. I could probably sit down and have no problems, you know, blasting through that again. And because I pulled this out, I have the other 7 issues laying on top of short box. That might happen tonight.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
So you had mentioned, I mentioned that there was a character that I was not able to recognize. And mm-hmm. you said that you were going to school me on this. So go ahead.
Right.
Class is in session.
All right. First of all, it is a real character from the Marvel Universe. It's Mesmero, who is an X-Men thing. But did you do you have the book in front of you?
I have the panel in front of me.
All right. Well, see, the reason I asked you to get the book is because there are several other panels around it mm-hmm. where they're all the characters at the poker table. Each panel, there is a character in green and purple. And each time at the end, you're supposed to realize that all these green and purple characters at the table are the Impossible Man changing shape while he's playing cards.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Because at the end, you get the Hulk, and the Hulk's like, I've never got to say this before. Thing beats Hulk. And then Johnny walks over and he's like, why'd you do that? And he's like, and the Hulk turns into the Impossible Man on the next page and said, I thought he was bluffing. And as you look through these panels, you're like, all right, it's the Prowler in the first thing.
Yes.
Then it's Mesmero.
Now I see it, where it's the Prowler, then it changes something else, then it changes that weird alien creature. And then
who's like an annihilus creature.
Yeah.
And then it turns into the Hulk. And if you notice, it's always, you can kind of make in the first panel that Goliath is there, and it's always in the same spot between Goliath and Tigra. It's Impossible Man. So do you see?
I see now, yes.
Look at me schooling Joe.
Right. And again, it's definitely a fun ending with the subversion of who ends up being the big winner.
Stretch wins. That's fantastic. I was like, that's a good joke.
Right. A very good joke tying into Dan Slott's other kind of pet project that he was doing at Marvel around that time as well.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely a great issue. Definitely check it out. As Todd mentioned, I'm sure you could find the entire thing collected somewhere. I'm sure all 8 issues are bundled up together.
Maybe in a sale this weekend somewhere. Who mm-hmm. knows?
Now, this typically does not happen, but it's only happening because I'm very busy and I'm too lazy to try to figure out a book. And I always say, we always put this out to the listeners, of course, if you have a suggestion, please let us know and we will try our best to get to it. And this is a suggestion that was presented to me about 2-3 weeks ago. The Bendis book ended up taking precedence over this, that it was Todd's turn, so now it's back to me. Friend of the show, longtime listener, friend of mine, Jesse Tipton suggested to me Marvel Graphic Novel number 29. I don't know if you know what that is off the top of your head.
Thing Hulk. Back-to-back Thing stories.
Right.
I can deal with that.
So it's a little bit on the big side. It's about 70 pages, 80 pages or so it adds. Back when Marvel was doing these original graphic novels, or they would do collections as such.
Right, which is no bigger than back when we did Doom Doctor Strange. So, and then, geez, we had the Brian Michael Bendis Fortune of Glory, so that was three issues. So I think we'll be okay with this.
Right. So I'm excited to check this out as a suggestion, something I have never read myself.
I've read it.
Thing, it's the Hulk. Oh, you've read this before.
Jim Starlin wrote it. Mm-hmm. Bernie Wrightson drew it. I had a big Jim Starlin face, so there's a lot of Jim Starlin stuff in my collection.
Gotcha.
So, looking forward to rereading this. It's been a while.
Yes. So, is that everything? Did I forget anything? That's next week's Todd and Joe Vicious, by the way.
Right. No, as of now, we can go to the movie/TV talk.
All right. I figure we'll do movie first.
Right.
Just in case, I'm assuming more people have probably seen the movie that are watching the TV shows.
I agree.
Okay. So if you don't want Justice League spoiled on you, we bid you adieu. Thanks for listening. Episode 373, Long Box Heroes. We're going to take a few moments, and then we're going to get into discussion there. Okay. So, Justice League. Batman assembles the heroes of the DC Universe to stop Steppenwolf, not the band, but a guy with giant horns on his head, from bringing three mother boxes together that are going to do a thing. Also, Batman decides that he might be able to use one of the mother boxes to bring Superman back to life, because we hope you forgot from the previous movies, we actually all like Superman.
Quick question.
Yes.
You do know what the mother boxes were going to do to the planet, right?
Yes, I do.
Okay, because they did mention... Gotcha. I just wanted to check on something.
I'm trying to be funny, Todd.
All right. I don't know, though.
This is the prepared material.
Sometimes I don't know how many root beers you had watching Justice League.
I had zero root beers watching the movie.
Okay. But go ahead.
So that's just the Cliff Notes version of the movie. Todd, you saw this before I did. Any thoughts? Any place you'd like to go with the discussion on this?
All right. I'm going to start out giving you my overall opinion. I really enjoyed this movie. And the way I had an argument in the theater early on as I was leaving with my friend Ralph, and I was explaining, I said, I didn't like Thor Ragnarok as much as I thought I would be, because it didn't reach the mark that I wanted to. And I liked Justice League more because it was better than the mark I had left for myself. Now, granted, that mark was really low. Does that mean I didn't have problems with the movie? No, it does not. But when I walked out of there, I paid $6 for it, because our local theater that sells beer has $6 tickets for every showing. So I enjoyed that with reclinable seats. God, I love that. But when I walked out, I felt I got my money's worth, and I had a good time. And I don't know. I enjoyed Justice League. That being said, I was almost out right out of the gate when they cut to that scene of Superman that the little kids are, getting an interview for their podcast or blog or whatever it was.
The first scene of the movie, sure.
Right. And Superman turns around, and that was probably, out of all the CGI mustache stuff, that was the worst. And I literally went, I might be out of this film. I might be out. And then it got better. I enjoyed things about it. There was things that I totally like went crazy for loving, and then there was things that I actually like legitimately like hated. But in the end, the likes outweighed the hates.
If they were going to take our review and put it on a poster.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope that they would, because I think we might be one of seven people that might be giving this a positive review.
Mm-hmm.
This was an enjoyable mess.
That is a good way to describe it.
I had a lot of fun at the movie. My expectations were set super low, and it went way beyond my expectations.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you mentioned about that opening scene. Now, I was prepared for the CGI upper lip. Right.
Right.
Now, for me, being prepared for the CGI upper lip, I was more taken aback that we were starting the movie off with a scene where Superman was not only being personable to people, but he also smiled at one point. I'm like, okay, we're setting the tone for what this movie is going to be. And it's very well known. It's very famous. Zack Snyder, due to a family tragedy, had to step away from the finale of making this movie. And Joss Whedon stepped in to finish things. You can certainly feel what parts of this movie are the Zack Snyder stuff and what stuff is the Joss Whedon stuff.
Yes, you can.
In a very glaring way.
Mm-hmm.
But it somehow worked in the enjoyable mess that this film is.
Mm-hmm.
My problems with the movie are the, and I say this every time that we talk about a movie, it's like the nitpickiest of nitpickiest things.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the things that I love the most about this movie are not whatever the opposite of a nitpick of something that you like is. Does that make any sense?
No, but go ahead. I might figure it out.
Okay, like toward the end of the movie, when Superman shows up and his costume is a bright blue, I went nuts. I'm like, that's Superman now. He's not wearing this light this dull colored blue thing that doesn't look good or inspiring or anything else like that. He showed up in a bright blue and a bright red and a bright yellow and everything popped and Superman popped and he was beacon, you know? Like he's supposed to have been in the last three movies that they've made.
Right. Which kind of ties into one of my nitpicks is where did he get the suit? Because the last place we saw the suit had a giant hole in the chest where Doomsday had killed him, which I'm guessing is a deleted scene, and you know what I mean?
Ma Kent knitted him a new one.
Right, so that's fine. But I'm with you. There's stuff that I loved and I hated. Here's one of the people have asked me what I thought about the Flash being a big Flash fan.
Mm-hmm.
I did not like the Flash early on, but he grew on me as a character. In the end, in my brain, even though he's Barry Allen and he's going to work for the Central City Police Department, that is not Barry Allen. That is Bart Allen.
Right. And I was going to say, the biggest problem with the Flash is that they call him the wrong name. And when he runs, he does like this weird little kick back with his leg that looks odd. But I can get over that.
He does the run like a dancer running in place when they're tap dancing.
Yes.
And it's you're like, whoa. But in the end, he was, you know, and we have the whole Justice League Unlimited and the cartoon where he's kind of the comedic relief, which I'm fine with.
Right. But I thought he was great. The Ezra Miller, I think, was the actor. I thought he was great. But the problem is they call him Barry Allen. And that is not and never will be Barry Allen. Now, they are retconning that to make the Barry Allen from the TV show kind of a more for the most part, except last season, but we're not going to talk about last season of the show. But they are taking like all the best parts of all the other Flashes, putting them together for the Flash that was in the movie and calling him Barry Allen because that's the Flash that Geoff Johns likes.
Well, here's the thing. I remember Didio saying, or if it wasn't saying, it was under the radar, is that we want all the characters' names that you don't need someone else to create them. Like, when you have Wally West, you need Barry Allen to create Wally West. When you have Guy Gardner, you need Hal Jordan to understand Guy Gardner. That's like when that happened, when all the characters came back and they did that, that was their thinking. We don't want to have to explain somebody else to explain this character. And I get that reasoning. I totally do. But yeah, I'm the same way with the Flash. But did I lose my mind when Flash, you know, was they were going to fight the crazy Superman who they used the dark version of the theme from the old Reeve one. And I kind of popped at that. But when he's beating up them and Flash is like, oh, well, I'll get behind him and I'll do the thing. And I know that was Zack Snyder. It wasn't Whedon, in my opinion. But when he's running and he's like, oh, I got this, and he looks and he sees, like, real slightly the eyes move, and he's like, wait a minute. And then he's like, then the head starts to turn. And then there's that look on his face, and I got goosebumps right now, where he's just like, he is as fast as me, and I am in trouble. And I was like, directed-wise, that was an amazing scene, and I absolutely loved it.
Right, that was a great scene. I enjoyed the fight scenes for the most part. I thought the special effects on Cyborg when he was doing stuff was real wonky.
And
go ahead.
Sorry. I was going to say, and Cyborg reminded me of not the Cyborg character, but Blue Beetle. Because remember when Blue Beetle had the armor that was the Scarab, and it would attack people without his control? It was like they swiped that from his run, and Cyborg was more just the, oh, I'm the thing sad about my body in a metallic, like a half cyborg body. Do you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Where now they added this whole alien tech, which Geoff Johns did in the Rebirth Cyborg, but he's also like, it reminds me of the Blue Beetle character, was like, I can't control this. Someone, you know, yells in my face and my suit wants to destroy him. And to me, that's more Blue Beetle than Cyborg.
I thought scene of Wonder Woman stopping the guys with the bomb was really good.
Yes.
That was a great fight scene. I thought, like I said, Wonder Woman was really good. Affleck as Batman is what it was. Except for one scene, Aquaman was really fun too.
Which was the what scene?
Okay. The very first scene where we're introduced to Aquaman, where Bruce Wayne goes to wherever that village is to get Aquaman.
Mm-hmm.
And the Aquaman in that scene is a completely different Aquaman from the rest of the movie, where there's the weird cut where he comes and he's asking him to join, and he doesn't know, like, Bruce Wayne is acting like he doesn't know that he's currently talking to Aquaman. He's like, oh, the king of the seas, Arthur Curry, or whatever it is. And all the people are like, oh, well, we're going to not tell you that it's this guy who's sitting right here because he's kind of like our secret. And then when Batman lets know that he knows, and Aquaman holds him up against the wall, and then Batman makes the joke of like, I hear you could talk to fish. And then there's the weird cut to them walking outside, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's a bad cut. That whole scene prior to that seems as though that belonged in a different version of the movie.
The Zack Snyder version.
But then the rest of the time that Aquaman is in the movie, he's like a completely different character.
And, oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead, go ahead.
And as you say, if I'm not sure which is more my favorite scene, it might be the Flash Superman scene where he's looking at him. But if not, the scene where Aquaman's walking out into the ocean drinking to Icky Thump by White Stripes, I'm like, all right, I'm in.
Well, you're just a White Stripes mark. I don't want to hear it.
I am, and I'm a Aquaman mark from Peter David's run, so I'm 100% fine with that.
But the rest, like the rest of my nitpicks, are little things that I felt could have either been eliminated or cleaned up or stuff that was like, okay, the I talked to fish, right?
Mm-hmm.
That was in the Zack Snyder thing. We saw that in one of the teaser trailers out of context like a year ago. And I felt as though they had to leave it in. And by leaving it in, we now have to later add in a clunky bit of dialogue to pay off that bit, right?
Where he says, I don't actually talk to fish. The sea does whatever, or something like that.
Right. So then there's also the whole thing with Barry Allen and brunch, right? A really weird, awkward joke that's completely out of place, and the scene goes on way... It felt like it went on way too long. Again, I felt that was a holdover from the Zack Snyder thing. They had to leave it in there, and now we have a thing that we tack on at the end to pay off that part that we left in that's out of place. There were parts of the movie that were out of place and weird and out of context that they had to later tack on extra stuff to make clearer.
I honestly think the brunch joke was Joss Whedon's. I honestly do. I honestly do. I think that joke early on, and it sets up the thing at the end, but I think of all that was Joss, not Zack Snyder.
And the scene where Martha and Lois Lane are at the Daily Planet, and
Thirsty.
What?
Thirsty.
Thirsty.
That where she says you were the most, Clark said you were the most thirsty woman he's ever met.
Right.
I mean hungry. Mm-hmm. That's all Joss. That's Joss Whedon.
Okay. That scene could have been completely eliminated.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the janitor who gets attacked by whatever comes out of the mother box. Mm-hmm. And then there's the news story where they talk about it. And then we go to the interview with his wife who is swearing and they're beeping it out.
Mm-hmm.
That could have been eliminated.
And, Joss Whedon.
Right. Okay. So those weird little add-in things like that I felt were unnecessary, and I understand that they were reshoots and Joss Whedon and everything else like that. You liked the brunch joke. I didn't like the brunch joke. The stuff that I'm pulling out of this...
I didn't say I liked the brunch joke. I said that was Joss Whedon.
Okay. I know I'm being nitpicky in this, but overall, I would say that this is on par, if not a smidge better than Wonder Woman.
Because it has more care. I would say that too. And just, and overall, anything that has to do with the Superman Flash race, I'm done. I'm all in. And when they have that little bit at the end, I'm like, the only thing that made me sad was they didn't show Flash just burn Superman. That's the only thing. Cause we know that's what happened. Right? You agree?
Yes.
Okay. And the other post-credit scene, it is cool to see the real Deathstroke, like, on the screen. The white-haired, not that, you know, whatever his Manitou or whatever his name is, who was the best part of Arrow over 5 seasons or 6 seasons that I've been watching it. But when I saw white-haired, you know, Deathstroke take off his helmet, I'm like, Arrow what? Arrow who? This is the new Deathstroke.
But all in all, I will say this.
Mm-hmm.
If you are a DC comic book fan,
right,
go see this movie. If you only watch the Marvel movies, if your only familiarity with the DC properties are the DC movies, you're probably not going to like this. But if you were a DC Comics fan, I think you will really enjoy this movie.
Right. And I have one last question because I don't want to harp on the movie too long. What did you think of Steppenwolf?
I thought Steppenwolf was fine. I know a lot of people are like, oh, it looked like a bad video game character and the effects were bad and everything else like that.
That ticks me off, but go ahead.
It was what it needed to be. I think we had discussed this at the shop that they weren't going to go whole hog with fourth world Jack Kirby sort of stuff. Let's ease you in, and we're going to give you Steppenwolf and some parademons. We're going to give you some Mother Box, and then that's it.
Okay, really quick.
Steppenwolf's a nice starter character.
Right. My opinion is everybody who's – because somebody Tom leaned over to me, and he said when it was over, he's like, yeah, I don't like it. Why'd they have to do a CGI villain? I said, it doesn't look good. I said, I didn't hear you complaining with Thanos. And right. He's all CGI.
Yeah.
And they're like, okay. So, like, you have a point. And then I was like, I really like him because he's a straightforward character. He tried to destroy Earth years ago. He got beat. It is all revenge now. Like a real, real easy, villain. Sometimes they get too deep with villains. And Steppenwolf's just revenge. Then we got Green Lantern Rings, which I'm cool with. Mm-hmm. And overall, like I said, I'm with you. I really enjoyed it. But though, didn't you at one point say that they were not going to say the words New Gods? And they did.
I think I said that they would say New Gods, but they wouldn't get into like they wouldn't say Orion, or they wouldn't say Light Ray, or they wouldn't say Big Bard and Mr. Miracle. You know, like at the most, they would say Dark Side. You know, the fact that they never, I think they might have said parademons once, and the fact that mother boxes were in the movie, like, these are the easy starting you into New God stuff.
Right, well, I honestly thought you meant over the course, like, we're not going to keep saying New Gods, like, it's going to be, we won't see New Genesis or any of that stuff, which I think we're going to see. I think we're going to see more of it as it goes on.
They're going to slowly parse it out. Like, we can't go the whole fourth world in one movie. We've already gone the entire Justice League over the course of 3 movies. Let's not go the entire fourth world in one.
which when it was originally Unite the Seven, and we don't have Seven yet. Remember that?
Right.
So, but we'll see.
But I again, not a bad movie, a little messy, but recommended.
I enjoyed it.
Yes.
I enjoyed it.
So now we're going to get into TV talk. Starting with The Flash. We're always a week behind on these shows because we record when the shows actually air, so it's difficult for us to do that. We're already late enough the way it is.
Right. I'd like to record at 1 in the morning, but Joe has a life.
Well, I don't have a life. I just pass out at that point.
True.
So the gang, this episode entitled When Harry Met Harry, this is more of them trying to find the metahumans that were created by the Vortex when they brought Barry back, the people that were on the bus. Now they're finding out more of the information of these folks. But to do so, Harry brings some of his friends to assist him.
Mm-hmm.
More so to find out who is behind it all. Also, a lot of this is the further cementing of Elongated Man as a permanent member of the cast.
Right.
And, you know, we get the introduction of the early versions of his costume. We get more and more of Barry and Elongated Man, Ralph, as a team, as partners. And I do like that they are slowly and surely more going away from this actor who plays Ralph Dibny being less and less 1994 Jim Carrey. He's actually almost putting his own take on this, on the portrayal of this character.
I agree. I think he's growing because even in this episode is the whole cliche, and in a good way, you know, what it is to be a hero. And Dibny doesn't want, like, he's like, we can't let him get away, and the girl gets hurt, and he's seeing the error of his ways. You know what I mean?
Right.
He's still a goof, which you need Ralph to be, but he's growing into the hero role. And by the hero role, that means less Jim Carrey shtick and more, at least I have to take the adventuring seriously. And I'm fine with that. And it's, to me, that's, you know, in a show as stupid as The Flash, as a show about a guy who runs fast, it's growth of a character, and I'm fine with that. And I don't mean Flash is stupid. You know what I'm saying?
Like, I do know what you're saying.
It's superhero stuff that you could just get away with, blah, blah, blah. It's a character who's going to grow throughout the season, but it makes me sad, just like Marco Flyvey or whatever his name was last season. We're going to lose him at the end because characters don't stay around on the DC shows for more than one season.
Did you just call him Marco Flyvey?
Yeah, I don't know what his name is.
Oh, my goodness.
From You're a Wizard, Harry, which shows up in this episode. What?
The You're a Wizard, Harry was a delightful remark there.
Sometimes you're a wizard, Harry. I was like, oh, God.
So, yes, we talk about the learning and the growth of Ralph Dibny to become a better person, of course. But the B-plot of this story, the multiple Harrys from the different universes, was the creme de la creme.
Yeah. Let's just quick mention Black Bison, and we'll get out of here because it was a Flash Firestorm villain that nobody really remembers from the comics. And that was actually the A-plot, was like the villain that we didn't even mention. So, but you're right, the creme de la creme is the multiple Harrys, the Steve Jobs, the Mad Max Terminator from the future, and
Hugh Hefner.
And Hugh Hefner, the Matthew McConaughey. Harry.
Okay, so now we had said this, you know, many times over the course of the recording and talking about The Flash. Tom Cavanaugh is a national treasure.
Mm-hmm.
I was sad when he was killed in the show. I said at the end of season one when they killed him off, I'm like, they are gonna find a way to keep him on the show. He is that worth it and that important to what this show is.
Mm-hmm.
The show cannot continue without him. I wish there was more of him. Literally, there was more of him in this episode. And it just goes to show you the range of him as well. And I have to say this. Todd, this is a light and fun show, both our show that we do here at Longbox Heroes and also the Flash TV show. And the other DC CW shows as well, and we like to have some fun at their expense, of course, you know, talking about the bad wigs and the small hats and the way that what's-his-face Steel's mouth looks when he talks, when he's in his Steel form. But Todd, I have to go on record and say that the effects on Mad Max Harry were some of the most embarrassing things I have ever seen in my entire life. And Todd, but I've watched, over the course of my 40 years on this planet, some of the most shoddily, slipshod, put-together, shoestring-budget, horror, sci-fi, student film, web originals. This is a show that's on network TV, Todd. This is a show that has the backing of a studio that has a budget, I would assume. If I was to show someone just a still of what's his name?
Mad Max Harry.
Right. Mad Max Harry, people would say they got, what, ninth place at a comic book convention costume contest or something?
Local comic book
convention. Like in the Wisconsin Dells area, no offense to the to the great state of Wisconsin, but I'm just throwing something out there. It was bad, Todd. It was embarrassingly bad.
I looked at it. It was interesting. I went with, in my mind, Joe, where I answer these questions in my head, I was like, he used what he had to in a post-apocalyptic future, and I'm fine with it, and moved on, because whatever. I don't dwell the way you dwell sometimes.
I'm not saying I didn't enjoy it, and I didn't say that I don't enjoy the camp and the cheese of it, but it looked bad.
I'm getting you that action figure when they put it.
If they make it, I'm getting it. You don't need to get it for me. I'll get it for myself.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, we get the cliffhanger at the end of the episode. So we, the watcher of the show, get to see the thinker, Clifford DeVoe, pulling the strings. Pull the strings behind the scenes in every episode this season. And they figured it out. They've narrowed it down to the right DeVoe. Because DeVoe is such a common name, like a Smith or a Jones. There's got to be literally thousands of them in a city like Central City, right?
Well, it's Earth One. Who knows? Maybe DeVoe's a common name.
Anyway.
Like beautifully, you know, post-apocalyptic cyborgs are in whatever Earth Mad Max Harry came from.
But so, anyway, go on. They get the right DeVoe, they show up at the house, everybody's ready, they're armed, they've got people stationed all over the place, and they open the door to quite the surprise. Definitely not what they were expecting, and definitely not what we, the watchers of this show, have been led to believe. And I know what the rib is on this, but I'm excited to see how it plays out.
Right, and they've never been fooled by a villain in a wheelchair before, Joe. So literally, I would have just punched him right in the face. Been like, guy in a wheelchair.
Nah, we've been down this road before.
That's right, and it almost killed me, so bam, just punched DeVoe, like knock him out.
Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. Whammo!
That's right. But yeah, and I do like DeVoe as a character, the thinker now. Like, when his assistant comes in the beginning of the episode and says, like, and he's like, because I'll think them all, or whatever she says, and she's like, what? He's like, oh, so we're doing this? We're having the conversation? Okay, let's go. And he goes through the conversation, and he does that line again, and I'm like, I love the thinker. The yep. Thinker's fantastic.
So Flash was good this past week.
Yes, I liked it.
Legends of Tomorrow, in an episode titled Helen Hunt.
I get that joke.
Oh, boy. It's the 30s, it's Hollywood, another time anomaly shows up, and this time it's Helen of Troy, who just shows up, and every man in Hollywood falls for her, starts a giant war between everyone. And there's a bunch of stuff going on with the totems, but also they do the, like freaky father, like son, vice versa, whatever body swapping, comedy you would like to put into this, where Jax and Eugene Grimby of the Wool Council switch bodies in an attempt to separate them from the Firestorm entity, and there's a lot of fun to be had with that.
Yes, there is. And it's probably the most ingenious way to take Firestorm out of the equation over the three seasons that we've had, because there's been a lot of really stupid reasons to not be Firestorm. Like, oh, we're going to go into two groups. Let's send our most powerful members one over there and one over there. Okay. But it's like we don't know what's going to happen. But then Hedy Lamarr says to do it because she was a scientist, and I was like, this is so good. And them doing each other's characters were absolutely fantastic.
Right. And I know Eugene Grimby of the Wool Council is a classically trained actor and singer, and he's actually the reason that they're doing all this stuff to write him out of the show is because he's leaving to go perform in something on Broadway, right?
Right.
But I have to doff my cap to the actor who plays Jax, Franz Drame. Mm-hmm. He does such a good job at getting the body language and physicalness of Stein down.
Mm-hmm.
He does a fantastic job.
I agree. I honestly feel like he was just like, Grimby, tell me how to do this scene. And, like, what would you do? And then just ran with it. You know what I mean? So it was. I was crying at times.
Now, the other thing is, of course, is whatever the movie, as you mentioned, about Hedy Lamarr. So when Helena Troy shows up, she takes the part in that movie that they're filming that Hedy Lamarr was supposed to take. And then, of course, she never becomes the big actress that she is. And then all of the stuff in present day is going away. And Todd, I will admit, I am a dum-dum. Mm-hmm. I did not know that Hedy Lamarr had such a rich non-acting career.
She basically created, and I actually knew this before I knew the show, was she was basically laid the groundwork for what became Radar for, like, the Navy and world. It was amazing. She was a legitimate genius.
Right. I was unaware of this.
Mm-hmm. So you were blown. You just thought Hedy Lamarr was from
Blazing Saddles.
Blazing Saddles.
Right.
There you go.
That was my. I'm like, oh, there you go. It's Harvey Korman. No, it's not. Yep. All right.
And she created Radar or what? And other stuff. Wow. Okay.
Listen, Todd, I'm admittedly a dumb guy.
Right. And I'm admittedly a genius too. So.
But yeah. So then, of course. They need to. They're putting the pieces back together, of course, because they need to write the time stream. But then they also need to return Helen back to her timeline, and of course, she's kind of pleading her case to the ladies of the Legends of Tomorrow, essentially saying, "If you put me back, essentially where you're putting me back is really bad for me. I know you putting me back is good for you, but it's bad for me." And they find a loophole, and by they, I think it's Vixen who does so.
Mm-hmm.
She finds a loophole. It's like, okay, this is the same time that you're from. This is kind of sort of the same area that you're from. And then we see a very poorly CGI'd version of Themyscira.
Yes.
And I thought that was a nice reveal as well, that now we're tying things into the Wonder Woman stuff. Now, I don't think we're going to get actual, like, Wonder Woman on the show, but we could just say, like, oh, it's Themyscira, we're going to get Amazons, and here's just a bunch of random Amazons, because the whole culture doesn't have to be anyone in the movie. You throw maybe one or two people that were in the movie on the show, and they're slumming, and it's all connected. It's poetry, it rhymes.
I don't think you'll see that, because you already have two Deathstrokes in the universe. The movie and the TV show, but over on Arrow, which you're not watching, they mentioned Bruce Wayne in Gotham the other week.
Uh-oh.
So they're really starting to hammer it home, which is weird because I have a whole, like, and I'm not even going to get into the whole theory where they're trying to keep this TV series and the movies separate and everything, and which ruined a lot of the stuff that they were doing in Arrow. And I thought it was bull. And I think they're trying to establish that there is some of this stuff. That there's the same characters, but you're not going to see a lot. You're going to only see mentions of Wonder Woman, Superman, or Batman's characters. You won't see them at all.
Right.
But so it's good TV all around.
Right. It was DC did good on their TV side this week, and you know, their comics themselves ain't too shabby neither.
Right. On a side note, are you going to try any of the Punisher stuff, or because the Punisher stuff spins heavy out of Daredevil season two, which I know me being the huge Daredevil fan on the show.
If anything that I have time for, it's going to end up being Runaways because it's at least something fresh I can jump into.
That is true.
You know, for me to watch Punisher, I have to watch season two.
I have sweat equity into the Marvel show. So.
Right. I have nothing.
Right.
God, sadly.
It's tough being the definitive Daredevil fan on this show.
Exactly. God bless you for doing it.
That is true.
Someone had to do it, and sadly, it's not me. I'm sorry, everyone. So yeah, I don't know. I might have time, but as mentioned, I've got a very busy week. I'm heading out to Ohio for Root Beer Wrestling.
Nice.
And they actually made the announcement that not this month, but next month, Sid Vicious is going to be making his appearance at AIW.
Is that boot full of meat?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Apparently, Sid's quite the interesting character.
Mm.
And then, you know, so obviously that's next month, but this weekend, they have their big return show, their first show back after being off for over 2 months. Just they like to take a little bit of a break there. And then Saturday in Philly, Powerbomb TV presents What's Up. held in the show is taking place, Todd, at the Chikara Wrestle Factory.
I've heard of that. Where they manufacture wrestles?
Yes, yes. First time going back to the building after about a year and a half. Fingers crossed I don't burst into flames upon entering, but we're going to find out the hard way.
I want to go now.
Well, if you can't be in Philly this weekend to watch it, you can certainly watch it on powerbomb.tv. I think you could use the promo code ABSOLUTE and get 20 days free. If you didn't use it before they did the last event, you can certainly use it for this event.
There was a different code for that, though, wasn't there?
I've been informed that code has been discontinued.
I figured as much.
Yes, yes.
And I figured you would be informed first.
Oh,
wink.
Well. You'd be surprised in what I'm informed of. So is there anything else?
No, I think we're good. That was an exceptionally long, short show with three things at the end.
Right. Well, again, I knew Justice League was going to take up a bunch, so...
I think it was your, you know, executive decision to cut short the news this week and only have two books was a smart idea.
Right. Yeah, that's why I'm the dum-dum of the show.
Oh, well. You're the, yes.
All right, everyone. Thank you for listening to episode 373 of Long Box Heroes. For Todd, this is Joe. We'll catch you all here next week.
Remember, be a faucet, not a drain.
Boop!
Call me in when the water's on.
Right.
You show me your phone and I'm like, ugh, that's gonna be odd.
Well, we're gonna do this real quick, right?
Don't point to them, I'll just...
Alright. So it's week 12. Ace and I are doing the football picks. I'm gonna ask him who he thinks is gonna win. Do you think it's gonna be the Vikings or the Lions?
Vikings.
The Chargers or the Cowboys?
Cowboys.
The Giants or the Redskins?
Redskins.
The Buccaneers or the Falcons?
Buccaneers.
The Bills or the Chiefs?
The Chiefs.
The Bears or the Eagles?
Eagles.
The Browns or the Bengals?
Browns.
Oh, boy. You're hoping for a big one. The Titans or the Colts?
The Titans.
Like the Teen Titans, huh?
Yeah.
The Dolphins or the Patriots?
Dolphins.
Wow, another big one. The Panthers or the Jets?
Panthers.
The Seahawks or the 49ers?
Seahawks.
The Broncos or the Raiders?
Bronco.
The Saints or the Rams?
The Saints!
Oh my goodness, it's the first time you haven't picked the Rams in forever. The Jaguars or the Cardinals?
The Cardinals.
Two more. The Packers or the Steelers?
The Packers.
And last but not least, the Texans or the Ravens?
Ravens.
Ravens. All right. This is going up right before Thanksgiving. Anything you want to say to anyone about Thanksgiving?
No.
No? Nothing about Thanksgiving? Hang on. You can't click away. I have to send the thing. Hang on. Stop. All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. Happy Thanksgiving.